interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 662. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed. And this is donation month, so I'm thinking we're going to drag this out now. You could donate to the network and give either give a coffee or give what you can and see what we can do to get this boat rolling better than the war going on. Maybe we won't be getting blown out of the water too soon, although I was just told we got like 261 accounts gone over there at Crumble, a free speech platform, folks, as they say. So if you can, donate to the network, help to pay for the coding that's going on. And we did have a problem here right after I did the broadcast. And apparently, we had a problem with the publisher, content publisher, and that's being worked on. It's been being worked on. And you didn't get a broadcaster for last week, and I'm hoping that gets fixed really, really soon. I was told it's being worked on, and so hopefully we'll get that done. Again, it's an ongoing process with the network, trying to keep ahead of things. Mine's been doing a great job keeping ahead. In other words, we had to have equipment, and he was coming up front to purchase it in order to keep ahead of the costs of the rising memory and all that. So there's a lot going on to try and keep this thing working and more efficiently. And on my end, I'm still got, again, bugs we're working on. I'm getting them worked out. It's just going to take a little while. And slowly improving things again as I work up the new setup and trying to get it into shape. But speaking of life not being a spectator sport, have you heard of the latest on the Patsy Tyler Robinson? Charlie Kirk bullet doesn't match suspect's rifle, says the lawyers. Tyler Robinson defense team may use this argument in an attempt to get the charges against him dropped. Tyler Robinson's lawyer said in a recent court filing that the U.S. Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms and Explosives, ATF, could not conclusively connect a bullet fragment recovered from Kirk's body to a rifle found at the scene, citing an internal report by the agency. Every firearm leaves a unique imprint on the bullet as the projectile leaves the barrel. And I suppose if it's a fragment after it leaves whatever it mashed into, and I was talking about that as well, what I witnessed on what appeared to be what I was witnessing on the video, which seems to be not AI now, just our observations, limits of our observations through these cameras and what we may or may not be seeing and not knowing the whole context, but the fragments will leave traces so they can follow. And when enough fragments are found in good condition, ballistics analysts can match the projectile to a weapon with almost 100% confidence. Robinson's lawyers suggested in the filings that they may point to a lack of match in an attempt to dismiss charges against their client. Text messages between Robinson and his transgender lover were then unearthed, in which Robinson confessed to the killing and revealed almost every detail of the plot, down to how he cleaned his fingerprints off the gun before stashing it in a nearby patch of woods. So imagine that. So if you see the unearthed text messages about the rifle Robinson buried in the forest, are they fake news? Are they a setup? Are they planted? No, we don't even know. We know all this stuff goes on now. It's deceptive. But you see here in the stories how they reinforce the concepting unearthed and buried together here relative to text messages. Were those found in the forest? Then why has the sheriff that arrested him resigned unexpectedly just this last week? And whom is the FBI working for in all this, as we are hearing the questions? I mean, you know, the FBI didn't do thorough follow-ups and interviews with the Epstein glass victims, their suspects either. Like, as I told you, there's a bigger problem behind this Epstein problem, this files, and what was going on with the investigations, the lack of them, essentially. But before we can accept the suggestions of Robinson's attorneys, let's review quickly what the ATF said, that it could not conclusively connect a bullet fragment recovered from Kirk's body to a rifle found at the scene. Could not, does not mean was not, and that does not mean it was not the bullet. So it doesn't, in a legal sense here now, I'm talking, not what I'm believing or thinking or whatever, I'm just going what they're, how they're playing the game out here. It doesn't exonerate Robinson, and why it's only a suggestion, the attorneys, their attorneys, their offer, that they may point to the lack of a match and may try to argue for the charges to be dropped. There's a whole lot more to this Just Us circus, and the title of the article is a bit misleading, and quite a bit actually. But we get to watch this play out as they do the Catbox cover-up, as far as I can tell. There's a whole lot of other things that are out there that I've also pointed out when I did a brief discussion. I'm not going to analyze all these things while they're going through the gyrations. I don't want to get lost in them. Just watch how it works. Just watch how the system plays things out. And I suggest to you, getting behind the woodshed, you have to understand how this works. And when you find yourself into a condition, you are more, you can anticipate better what you're up against and what you might need to be doing. Hopefully, you've already prepared a large part of your awareness to being able to address certain things that you might find yourself wanting to do, but that will get you into a question, or as this case, it seems, be set up for a question. So keep our minds on that. And but speaking here of Just Us and injustice, Trump says, I don't need international law. Only one thing limits my power. And I've talked to you about this word power, just mentioned how important it is to see that someone has it and lawfully. And this kind of negates what he just says. If you have power lawfully, he's going to have to look at something about the law. In an extraordinary interview, Donald Trump defends his record on Venezuela and threats to other nations, including Greenland, Colombia, and Mexico in the last week. In a wide-ranging defense of a week of global provocation, the United States president laid out a motivation behind his actions. Quote, I don't need international law, Trump told the New York Times in an interview in the Oval Office. When asked if there were limits to his power, Trump replied, yeah, there's one thing, my own morality, my own mind. It's the only thing that can stop me. The president added that his administration did not need to follow international law, but contended that following it, quote, depends what your definition of international law is, close quote. Sounding just like another president saying, depends on what is. Right, Bill? Never had sex with that woman, Clinton? Except then he took an oath. Trump did. The president, all these people take an oath to uphold the law. And that includes international law. And by relying solely upon his mind or morality, his decision, and not law, which is the objective basis I keep mentioning for decades now about what we are to do to protect ourselves in these days when there is no law and no one will recognize it. And more importantly, you start to see there's no accountability. And so I say you better make it available to you if it's not going to be generally available, but solely relying on Trump's his own mind, his morality. Well, what could that be? I mean, wow. If you look at what he's been doing, the killing, the genocide he supports and does, what he's doing now over in Iran, it's hard to fathom what this guy is willing to do. And he has no guardrail, if you will, the new AI discussion. There's no guardrail. But if he's only going to rely on his morality and his mind, he's essentially, openly, and voluntarily renouncing his oath of office, which required him to follow the law. Not the one he makes up or believes is applicable, but the one, all the laws. So in this case, where he sounds like he's voluntarily renounced his oath of office, he would be then a usurper in that office, subject to an action of quo warranto to challenge in his right to hold that office after the renunciation of his oath by anybody who wanted to do that. So fancy that. People are waiting for an election to see an impeachment? Really? They're going to wait that long? But whom is it Trump's mind relies on and morality relies on around him that influences him instead of the law to guide his internal moral compass such that it is the problem. And we're watching that fallen nature play out. amplified by his foibles and character flaws. Trump also admits he always hangs around the losers to make him feel better. Donald Trump said that he likes to spend his time with losers to boost his ego, admitting it makes him feel better. The president's admission came as he made several bizarre remarks while at the Future Investment Initiative in Miami on Friday. During the event, Trump called Iranian official Qassem Soleimani, whom he had killed in 2020, a great leader and a mad genius. The 79-year-old president then moved on to a Q&A session, during which he was asked, "What leadership trait is the world missing right now?" And he responded, "Well, it's winning." The president went on to ramble about sports before claiming that he often surrounds himself with losers to make himself feel better. He continued, "It's a good thing to have a lot of losers. I always like to hang around with losers actually because it makes me feel better." And for clarity, for those of you that are scoffing at that, because I was kind of, you know, this guy's joking, right? I mean, he'll do that. But for clarity, expanding on his remarks, Trump said, "The world today lacks one key leadership trait, the ability to win, drawing a comparison with sports where outcomes are immediate and undeniable." Trump argued that success and failure are far more clearly defined in the field than in other areas of life. Quote, "You got a lot of losers, mostly losers, fortunately," close quote. He said briefly before walking back his earlier comment about preferring their company, adding, "I'm only kidding, sort of." Yeah, sort of. Kidding. When I look at Hegseth and Bondi, Patel and the others, kidding, sort of, I can't disagree. Oh, and Bondi, you're fired. Just like that boob tube program, The Apprentice. Trump brings in a bunch of losers so he can stroke his ego saying, "You're fired. How about you do Hegseth at the Department of War Crimes next? Would you please?" And despite Trump speak, people still apparently listen. And rightfully so, where it is unambivalent. So we got to listen very carefully that Trump sparks uproar with his loser's remark. At a Miami investment summit, President Donald Trump said he prefers to spend time with losers because it makes him feel better, adding he dislikes hearing from very, very successful people. The offhand comment drew laughter in the room, but ignited criticism online, with some interpreting it as a confession to surrounding himself with the incompetent allies. As I just said, has to be a confession. I can't find a thing to argue with him about here. And to follow those losers up, but notice Trump does rely on international law or treaties when it is convenient, contrary to his assertion that he don't need no stinking international law, which is actually international norms for peaceful interaction amongst countries. The U.S. to have full military access to Greenland, demands Trump. So Trump takes credit here in this article for the 1951 Denmark-U.S. Mutual Defense Agreement, whereby the U.S. undertook to militarily protect Greenland from such menaces as the Nazis, today conflated to Russia and China. And that's full military access. What an ungrateful blowhard the bully and brute Mar-a-Lago Marlar is. Always creating the chaos he claims to stop. He wants a golden age dome. And all he had to say here, based on that agreement, based on the international law that he did take credit for to say so, but we're going to install these military facilities to protect you and the U.S. as well, and our Arctic interests pursuant to the 1951 Defense of Greenland Agreement, which, by the way, recognizes Denmark's sovereignty over that territory and where any U.S. military presence is contingent upon Danish consent. And as the Greenland's status prior to 1951 agreement, the part of the 1916 treaty of the Danish West Indies, the United States recognizing Danish sovereignty over Greenland, which was a condition for the U.S. purchase of the Virgin Islands. as well under the 1823 Monroe Doctrine, in the interest of peace, the United States stepped in to act as Greenland and Iceland's protector in World War II. There was and is no need to threaten anyone, as this mobster-in-chief pretends to look tough. He talked a lot at Davos about it to impress people, only to undermine his own false rhetoric hours later, essentially conceding the fact of, well, his conceit or his lack of credulity to recognize the lack of lawful power of a confabulator-in-chief to do more than peacefully abide the international agreements obligating the United States government. Not Trump, the government, which he's the executive for. This guy's just an international embarrassment-in-chief. And I've questioned that in the past. This has to be more of a cognitive dysfunction, maybe jab harm to boot. He wants to be the peace president, he did say before. He seemed to abandon that, or he talked about how he wasn't able to legitimately be that underneath that Nobel requirement. And all he needed to do was follow the law of the agreement, because the law brings peace, as I've been saying for over a decade. I found that out looking at mining law and what property law, land law, is about, and what it's about, how it starts out in war, if you will, like for the miners, and how they settled it by making a law and an agreement. But as long as it gets followed, they get wealthy. You get minerals out of the ground. You don't have a deficit in your mineral capacity in a nation. The law brings the peace, and Trump, that's why I've been identified on this and getting on this guy all the time. He doesn't want to follow the law, and then he wants to demand that he's a peace somebody. He wants to abandon what things will bring the peace. So why can't the Trumpster fire just do what he took his oath of office to do? Fidelity to the law. Not his morality or his mind, but the laws. To faithfully execute the office of the President of the United States and to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States, so says his oath. The Constitution is a creature of international law, don't you know? The same international law that is no stranger to the Supreme Court of the United States, as stated in Kansas versus Colorado 1907, which I've talked about a long time ago, quite often. The President is to act in good faith with integrity while in office. Now, how is it good faith, acting with integrity, to confabulate the non-existence of existing treaties or other international agreements or the obligations and duties to cause many people hardship or fear, intimidation, or dread like any other terrorist government ruling thereby? Can someone explain that to me? I'm sure he can't. But again, when it stopped making sense, maybe you weren't in the place that you thought you were. And the way this place is wired in the United States, and it's international law, actually, maladministration needs to be stopped by the people. The right to alter or abolish. It's printed in the Constitution of the United States. It's discussed in the Declaration of Independence, but it's actually a right of peoples against oppression. And what about that purchase of the Virgin Islands from Denmark? See, there's a deal going down. There's a property deal going down. And he wants to ignore this and be the tough guy instead? He doesn't have to. He doesn't have a right to. Epstein and the U.S. bid for Greenland. The link you probably never knew. There's a link to an RT video on this article. The disgraced financier's Caribbean island of human trafficking horrors was originally purchased from Denmark. In 1917, Washington paid Copenhagen $25 million in gold. There's money now. Gold for property, not fiat, in gold. Roughly 633, for those of you number officios, $633 million today for part of the West Indies, now known as the U.S. Virgin Islands. The sale included a small island called Little St. James, which was purchased in 1998 by Epstein, the financier with alleged intelligence ties and extensive connections to global elites, including Trump. Epstein was disgraced for sexually abusing girls and died in prison cell while awaiting trial, we are told. U.S. authorities maintained he committed suicide. But we know Epstein was too connected, so it seems Epstein didn't kill himself. Notably, the original Virgin Islands sale included a pledge not to object to Danish, quote, political or economic interest to the whole of Greenland, close quote. Now, why is that so hard to understand and follow? But speaking of Epstein's connections, how many handshakes from Epstein are you? Epstein is the symptom. The elite is the disease. The U.S. Department of Justice has released another batch of files connected to Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein? I guess it depends on where you come from, right? So extensive that even Russia's, quote, foreign agents, close quote, and emigre commentators felt compelled to sift through them. Quote, it seems this isn't a conspiracy theory after all, close quote, they muttered, suddenly uneasy. Quote, it seems the American and global elite really did indulge in depravity with children. And perhaps even something worse, close quote. Stunned, they asked each other, will nothing change now that the truth is out? Is the world simply evil? But the world is not doomed. What these revelations provoke is disgust, outrage, and for many in Russia, at least, very little surprise. And this is our danger here in America. Don't be not so surprised you sit and just watch and do nothing in your own defense. And this is what I found would be our weakness, why I talk about it all the time. The revolution is you for you. Hopefully, beyond that, we can get together because then we all have a basic basis from which we can work, and then we can work together much more effectively. Again, we take our own rope of experience and skill, and we help someone else pull down the edifices of power, as I described it years and years ago. But what exactly is new here? The parts of the global elite are morally rotten, but haven't they behaved that way in full public view for years? Was it not the same elite acting through NATO coalitions and political blocs that bombed countries, toppled governments, and plunged entire regions into chaos? For over a decade, the world has lived with the consequence of decisions made by a tight circle of self-styled civilized leaders. The problem is not just a few twisted individuals. It is the elite as a collective. Is that communism? As a collective, it's cohesive, protected, smug, and convinced of its own impunity. Don't you hear Trump say that all the time? I'm immune now. Supreme Court told me that. Well, they didn't really. As I was talking about the Tyler Robinson, a Turner saying, well, it doesn't match the gun that they could not match. And you look very carefully at what's being said. He can do a lot, but he can't do everything. He is not immune from everything. And so watch very carefully. It sounds in this article saying, no, we're not done yet. We're not doomed. We can do things. And I think part of it's paying attention and getting to the details. And the details, in this case, the details could set us free from the tyrants who attempt to try and hide behind this idea that there is this band of protection. They're so arrogant that they believe that. And we don't have the type of accountability that we need. And part of that problem has to do with allowing it to get so bad for so long. And I go through my mind a lot on how this works out, and there's just not anybody, not enough people to try to hold the officials' feet to the fire. And we got that. I guess I'll just bring up quickly the case in Tennessee relative to David Tulis. And I could predict that within 2 weeks, I predicted that case was going to go for years. I could just see how that was unwrapping really quickly. The judge was doing everything in her power to destroy the case. And saying that was how I found out about child services in the way we now know Epstein, and that child services, state services, is really just trafficking kids because a judge didn't do what he ought to do, and nobody knew, at least the mother and the father didn't know the procedural problems that the judge created in their case to keep them from getting their girl back. And so you got to be aware of these rules, and they come through. You start watching what's being said. You get to the detailed part. It's kind of, you know, it's boring in a way to try and figure it all out. your eyes bleed and all this to get it, but we have been uneducated about all of it. And that's how they are getting away with it. Anybody who wants to say that allow Trump to do what he's doing, the way he's doing it, and not use the law, as we saw in Gaza, no one stepped in. The law is you step in and you stop the genocide now. You don't make an excuse. But the world, essentially, talk doesn't work. So the action didn't really come to stop it. Now we're seeing a little bit about that right now with Iran. Now, I'm not talking whether I like Iran as a regime or their government. I'm saying that there's certain principled actions people must take in the world if they want to keep the biggest evils off of them. And when you don't, you invite it onto you. And that's what I said, is it's written into the Constitution of the United States. We have the right to the actually obligation and duty to alter and abolish a maladministration of the government that comes to hurt us. And if we don't, we accept that onto us, even though it's not right. And this is what you see going on. As I said, the Palestinian condition, the Gaza, was the open-air prison, not unlike, except for scope and look, what you see, as what America is. People don't realize that this country now is an open-air prison, as lots of other places are. But the rights and the papers that we were told they're just a piece of paper, yeah, they are, because we're not putting force in effect. And a lot of us, I'm not saying my listener or myself, just a lot of us as a general population, don't even know where to begin. I see so many people missing the point to start off, where they feel that they got it right, and they really don't. And I have to say, yeah, maybe the judge, even though he's a corrupt guy, or maybe he didn't quite understand something, or maybe on purpose, or he is silently putting an agenda, he understood that it was wrong, and he can back that up. And he's got a whole team of people that are going to back him up. And that's, what I identified with David Tulis's case, and said, this is going to go on, and they're going to run this. So I decided to bifurcate his case. Not only did we went through the courts, but we went through the administrative side. And we were able to then expose more of why the injustice is going on for anybody who wanted to look into that case. And David Tulis did a great job bringing that along, understanding what was going on. We're just dealing in a system that doesn't have the accountability it needs. It's self-healing. And there's not enough people observing that more than being disgruntled about it. And so this is these articles I bring also, there's someone here looking in saying from afar, look at how bad it is over there. Is that pervasive in the world? Since saying, we see this is really bad. We do have that in us. We do have the goodness in us. Why is the bad prevailing? The elite, so-called collective, is smug and cohesive and protected. I mean, they are convinced of its own impunity. Just add that to Trump. He's convinced in his own right, in his own mind, that he's right. And you're fired if you don't believe that. Look at how that works. It's not a healthy mind at all, nor is it a healthy moral compass. When you see how casually they destroy weaker nations in politics, it's not hard to imagine an island where the same people feel entitled to indulge their private vices. Political cruelty and moral corruption rarely exist separately. Journalist Anna Mongate wrote that she spent an entire day studying the Epstein files as if sorting through rubbish. She says it looks unreal, as though generated by artificial intelligence. Quote, old men I know from official chronicles groping teenage bodies. One frame would be enough for a universal scandal, but these are thousands. By evening, she said she was wondering whose handshake had directly connected her to Epstein. The thought, she wrote, made her want to wash her hands up to the elbow. Now she fears Epstein will drag down not only the American establishment, but, quote, many of our own people. Again, a foreigner looking how well connected this guy was. And that's what my interest is. Not really on the sensational. They're wondering how far up their arm they're going to have to wash their arm. It is said all of us are just maybe 6 degrees, they call it, people away from somebody else anywhere in the world, if we looked at all the connections. Article goes on to say, but two things must be said. First, not everyone is linked to Epstein by some chain of social proximity. Many of us are not connected to that world at all. Not by one handshake, not by 10. and we will not drag down our people because we were never part of that circle. And this statement is so important to understand. This is almost metaphysical. You can't make it part of you. Don't bring it in and don't give it energy to continue. Work the other way. Second, you did not need to know about Epstein Island to recognize the moral bankruptcy of the global elite. Look at Ukraine. The same political class that now shocks you with its private depravity has been overseeing the destruction of a country in public. These cannibals may not literally devour people, but the result is much the same. They would have consumed Russia, too, had it not resisted. Now take note, not resisted. This is the resistance that must step up in the face of evil this way. Understand that evil persists as long as people remain fascinated by it and eager to belong in it to its circle. Cleansing oneself is actually simple. Stand on firm moral ground. Judge people by their actions, not their smiles, slogans, or fashionable reputations. And maybe we in America can take this good counsel to heart and take it behind a woodshed. Whatever your social proximity, never too late to stop walking with the devil. But that might require a bit of a roadmap for a job this big. Mapping Epstein's Israel connections, what the documents show. And I go through this because remember, those of you that have been listening to for a while, you realize or know, because I've told you, I hit this child services thing, this trafficking kids under the color of helping them. And we come through the rights of child from the UN, that's global, found it in a state, found the corruption inside the state, found out how they're hiding it, moved my way through, found out it went into the federal's making laws to exploit all that. And so these things I'm talking about, when you see how wide and global, you can go just through the kids themselves, the little ones, the girls, the boys, and you watch how this works, you can almost map out how global the problem is. And how vast this thing is on that alone. And there's just so many other facets that people start apparently making tons and tons of money. I've never, ever seen that in my life. I've never had that in my mind. I've never understood how people can do it. But it's out. So it's out there. It's out there. A lot of people seem to be doing really well in times where people are under strife. And I don't know how people can take advantage of other people. And maybe that's why I'm not rich. Maybe that's why I'm wealthy as far as money. And so that's why I find a little bit of interest when you say mapping the connections. We don't know where all of us, my listener and anybody who may listen in the future, where we live around the globe, what our connections might eventually be, what we might know, and we coalesce and pull ourselves together, we might become have our own ability regained. It's always in us. It's just regained to act. This is why getting behind the woodshed is you take the miscreant behind the woodshed. You need to understand that we get back to war. You're in a war. These last few months, you know we can move it right up into a spiritual war. I hope. I hope you see that. And so we don't get too far away from the real battle. But you are in that, and you are in that everywhere. Again, life is not a spectator. Being free of that, you're either absorbed or subsumed by it, or you are free of it. And to do that requires a little bit of work. And newly released Epstein files revive scrutiny of his deep ties to Israel's political and security elite, raising unresolved questions about intelligence leaks, influence operations, and decades of protected immunity. So here we are back to the protected immunity. There should be none. There should be accountability for harms. And yet we see it even acknowledged that that's what's been going on. This guy was connected. And I told you, I've already made a quick little discussion about this. It does, to my mind, it doesn't matter. Sensational is not important here. Who was he that he was connected and to whom? He tells us in the emails, and he's not the only one. And then we look around and wonder why we have problems. And then a lot of y'all, maybe not behind a woodshed, not listening to me, maybe y'all won't do this, but you're all, I see so many people now wrapping themselves around, oh, we got to vote, we got a voter ID now to go vote and vote these guys out, and everyone starts missing the point. Most people know for at least a few seconds. That's, voting's not getting you out of the problem, but that's what people flock to. That's all what they think that they have left. And yet there's so many more things available. Knowing where these guys are, how they go about doing it, may start to allow you to freely think again how you might address someone who may actually have the paper, the votes, the office to say something. But like I'm trying to point out to you here, Trump took an oath of office. I gave you the standard written right out of the Constitution, out of the oath, or out of the oath that he takes. He's got to be doing the law. When he isn't, we're supposed to be stepping up and calling him to the carpet. You can't rely on his administration to do that, right, Pam Bondi? Newly released Epstein files revived scrutiny on the deep ties to the Israel's political and security elite. I hope you didn't miss my point on that. Look at what's going on in this Siberian gulag. The digital world, the digital attachments that are coming on. This guy, Epstein, was ultimately connected, I think, through and to where all of this ends up going. Again, I said before, he might be Israeli intelligent. He didn't have to be. He might be a Mossad agent. He didn't have to be. He was just working with them. He gave them. He was influential in getting the things they wanted to move along. Always, you see, always in the finance side. The key takeaway is Epstein's files deepened scrutiny of his longstanding ties to Israeli political power, particularly through repeated contact with former Prime Minister Ehud Barak. Allegations of Israeli intelligence leaks appear in declassified FBI records showing such claims were treated as a formal counterintelligence concern, not a fringe speculation. But for us, I don't really care. Someone made a connection. I don't really care that it's fringe or not, that someone wants to say it's a fringe speculation. I know there was enough connection that those people were involved to do something in the world. That's why it was a concern. And while we can't take it as a fringe speculation, it's what was going on. And it's not gone. This is not gone because Epstein didn't kill himself. Epstein retained elite access and protection long after his 2008 conviction, raising unresolved questions about impunity, and institutional shielding. Israel emerges in the files as a strategic node in Epstein's global influence network, connecting U.S. politics, Gulf elites, and international diplomacy. Survivors say the document release still prioritizes power over accountability, exposing victims while leaving many enablers unnamed or legally untouched, or improperly redacted. As Thomas Massie, Representative Thomas Massie, is completely over this, just on this. It's one of the bills he helped bring, got it to go, and he's watching this thing and calling out all these things that are going on. In fact, the new replacement for Bondi was just given notice. Now you have to give rid of, you have to stop violating the law and bring this documentation. So there's got to be a witness on this and an action. And that's what I ask about doing, getting behind a woodshed. That's what we are obligated to do for ourselves, at least. The latest release of millions of pages from the United States Department of Justice, Jeffrey Epstein's files, has reopened one of the most disturbing questions surrounding the disgraced financier. Not only who enabled his crimes, but whether his access, protection, and longevity were tied to intelligence and state power, particularly Israeli networks. While Epstein's relationship with the U.S. presidents, that is plural, U.S. presidents, billionaires, and royalty have long been documented, the new tranche of documents places renewed emphasis on his unusually close ties to Israel's political, intelligence, and diplomatic elite, most notably the former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak. Ehud Barak and Epstein's New York residence. According to documents cited by Anandulu agency and CNN, Barak and his wife, Neely Priel, stayed multiple times at Epstein's New York apartment between 2013 and 2017. Email correspondence released by the U.S. Justice Department shows routine logistical coordination involving Epstein's assistant, Leslie Groff, including cleaning arrangements, technology upgrades, and travel planning. Barak has acknowledged knowing Epstein since 2003 and confirmed maintaining contact even after Epstein's 2008 conviction for procuring a minor for prostitution. He has repeatedly denied witnessing or participating in any criminal activity. And this is where I want to say, okay, fine. He was still in connection with. He was still influencing and influenced by. He was told to, by Epstein to do certain things, which he did. And those activities went on and touched more people. And the network got built and bigger for Ehud Barak's needs. Epstein didn't even have to care about that. But if you look, the tie becomes financial to all of this. And my concern about this was the not just the corruption of the United States government, why it's never going to be a dismissible issue, but it's how this new world is being brought together and who the players are and how fast it's coming together and why it's coming together so fast. And that indicates then we need to take it seriously. And it will also indicate the things that we might do to protect ourselves from it. This digital financial construct of the future, perpetual debt, is right up around our necks. And I don't think people really understand that. The United States Congress, is about ready to bring these. We already talked about the stablecoins. They're tightening up that U.S. that CBDC stablecoin condition with the United States government. It's really almost ready to come back out on us. And I don't hear much people talking about that, nor do I hear a lot of people moving into where we need to go, the sound money thing, which Trump certainly is not going to do. That would be in the law, wouldn't it? He's not going to do that. So it doesn't matter to me that he didn't witness this depravity. That's irrelevant. He was connected to do something else even if he wasn't doing it. And that is, I don't want to dismiss what happened to the victims. But as we can see, like the Tyler Robinson case, a fragment of a bullet that can't be put in a gun doesn't mean that it wasn't using the gun. These girls may have been legally within consent form time. And that would make a whole lot bigger problem for them, even though they were duped because they were young. But what maintained this, that was just the conduit, the ability to aggregate more and more connection influence. And it all of it essentially goes back into the monetary condition, which is being exploited by Trump, his family, the digital realm, the tokens, the coins, the bitcoins and all, and all the investment houses, all the investment brokers are doing it, moving in that direction. And you look at what the rules are within that, and I don't even know how we breathe. Literally, I don't know how we breathe. Is that air you breathe, Neo? It becomes real. Is that air you breathing now? Do they know about that? So he has repeated, Ehud Barak repeatedly denied witnessing or participating in any criminal activity. However, the volume and normalcy of the correspondence years after Epstein became a registered sex offender has renewed public scrutiny over the nature of their relationship. And that's more what I'm kind of saying, the nature, right? I mean, what is that? What's going on right there that no one's really paying attention to that is the main problem for us? How we're watching the corruption so bad and so unaccountably so. The FBI memo and Mossad allegations. More incendiary are revelations contained in declassified FBI memo from 2020 released as part of the same document trove. The memo, authored during an FBI investigation into foreign influence over U.S. elections, cites a confidential human source alleging that Epstein, quote, worked with Israeli intelligence, close quote, and was believed to be a, quote, co-opted Mossad agent, close quote. The memo further claims Epstein was, quote, close to former Prime Minister of Israel Ehud Barak, close quote, and suggests that Epstein was trained during Barak's tenure in Israeli leadership. While the memo does not constitute judicial findings and relies on a confidential source, its inclusion in an official FBI file underscores the allegations were taken seriously enough to be documented within a counterintelligence framework. Email exchanges between Epstein and Barak included references, sometimes joking, sometimes defensive, to Mossad, including a 2018 message in which Epstein asked Barak to clarify publicly that Epstein did not work for Israeli intelligence. Protection plea deals and belongs to intelligence. The files also revisit Epstein's 2008 Florida plea deal, widely described by critics as a sweetheart deal. According to the FBI documentation, then-prosecutor Alex Acosta was allegedly told that Epstein belonged to intelligence, a claim Acosta has not substantiated publicly, but which has circulated for years, but which, if you'll remember, I've suggested doesn't matter. He could be independent of all that and be the agent of another to advance the global agenda of the financial mafia class. Why he had the title of financier, why that was his specialty, so-called. The memo also referenced Harvard Law professor Alan Dershowitz, alleging, again via a confidential source, that he acted in ways aligned with Israeli intelligence interests. Dershowitz has categorically denied all wrongdoing and intelligence ties. Trump, Kushner, and Israel's influence now comes up. The newly released files repeatedly reference Donald Trump with more than 1,800 mentions across the database, and I've been hearing here recently, more recently, it may be over 5,000, confidential informant says, and you see the problem with this, informants may not be accurate. However, I'm not caring whether they're accurate. I'm wondering, because of the proximity and their interactions, that we have a bigger problem. We don't have to prove it. We just have to see it. Once we see it, we knows them. That's what the laws of war are. We knows them when we sees them. And it may take a little bit more, but we get a dog on the hunt. We go after these people that are pretending to be looking out for us when they're looking, you know, they're self-conflicted and they're not just looking out for themselves. They're looking out for someone else's interests that they may not even know, but they get their bread buttered with it. We don't know their morality. They can have none whatsoever and just work, right? Work to an end. It encourages their vices. It feeds their drugs, whatever it is they want. While Trump has denied wrongdoing and has not been charged in connection with Epstein, like who has, the FBI memo alleges that Trump was, quote, compromised by Israel, close quote, and identifies Jared Kushner as a central figure within Trump's decision-making circle. So when we hear Trump say he lives by his morality and his mind, and I ask, who is he listening to within his administration? Intelligence says it's Jared Kushner. And I hope some of you all have got interested enough to see where that kid goes and where he's been placed and what he's doing. And things don't look so good real fast with this guy. That's an influencer of Trump's decision making. The memo also highlights the role of ultra-Orthodox Chabad Lubavitch movement, describing it as a politically influential and closely connected to hardline Israel settler ideology. Kushner is identified as a supporter of the group. These claims remain unproven in court, but their presence in official FBI records has intensified demands for transparency regarding the intersection of intelligence, ideology, and political power. And they got their transparency. Nobody sees it up until now. Nobody has seen it. It's been as transparent as a ghost. Israel as a diplomatic lever. Emails released in the file suggest Epstein viewed Israel not only as a personal connection, but as a geopolitical tool. And this is why I keep saying he doesn't have to be their agent. He just looks, they're a tool, they're a connection, they're something that he can use to advance his agenda or his objectives, whatever he's paid to do by whomever else is out there. In one message, Epstein claimed to have advised Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi on visiting Israel to strengthen ties with Washington. India's government has since dismissed those claims as trashy ruminations. Other documents suggest Epstein attempted to broker high-level meetings involving Israeli officials, Gulf elites, and Western power brokers, reinforcing portrayals of him as an informal intermediary operating beyond normal diplomatic channels. Survivors and the question of impunity. Amid the focus of elite networks, survivors of Epstein's abuse have sharply criticized the Justice Department in handling of the file release. Nearly 20 survivors issued a joint statement saying their identities were insufficiently protected, while the identities of alleged abusers remain largely concealed. And Representative Thomas Massey has called them on that and said, this law didn't allow you to do that. You're supposed to conceal the victims and show the people who were they were talking with. Civil rights lawyer Gloria Allred described the release as, quote, devastating, close quote, and accused authorities of prioritizing institutional protection over survivor dignity. Leave it to a woke celebrity attorney, virtue signaling, to offer the wrong response. Why didn't she just go to the court and have the court order compliance with the law? Following Thomas Massie's suggestion, why didn't she just go order the compliance, have the court order compliance? But the names not victims would not be redacted, ordering the removal of all redactions not consistent with the law to provide the possibility of the victim could directly connect their abuse with the perpetrator for the purpose of civil remedy. Does Gloria Allred consider herself Jewish? That she won't petition the court to remove redactions the law requires that might name perpetrators she is more sympathetic to than women's rights and social justice, and more than identifying the national security threat that those redacted names and their affiliations might pose to America, that the FBI found very concerning, but failed to either investigate further or transfer the investigation to the government national security apparatus. How about that, Tulsi Gabbard? Any insight for us? Why Israel matters in the Epstein story? What distinguishes Epstein's Israel ties from his other elite connections is not merely proximity, but continuity. A decades-long relationship with Israeli political and intelligence figures, repeated references to Mossad in official U.S. documents, and a pattern of extraordinary legal protection. No court has proven Epstein acted on behalf of Israeli intelligence, but the accumulation, what is it, circumstantial, right? I mean, this is what they're talking here. The accumulation of documents, emails, memos, and plea deal anomalies have made one conclusion unavoidable. You notice them when you see them, folks. Court doesn't have to tell you. Epstein did not operate as a lone predator, but with a protected ecosystem where intelligence, money, and political power overlapped. As millions of pages are now public, the unresolved question is no longer whether Epstein had powerful friends, but whether the intelligence relationships hinted at it. These files explain why his crimes were tolerated, concealed, and delayed for so long, and why the Epstein files should never be dismissed as Donald, I've renounced my oath of office to comply with the law, Trump does. Not because of the sensational scandal, but if this systemic corruption, foreign and domestic, is not cleared up completely, America, as we thought we knew it, is doomed, if not already. And that's for those of us to make that decision. And just like a globalista, now the Iran Unwar is all about the children, don't you know? Those future generations, don't you know? Of Epstein-class victims. War on Iran is investment in children's future, Trump says. The U.S. will be stronger, safer, and more prosperous than ever before once the conflict is over. We read that part again. Once the conflict is over, the president has claimed. Did he step in this one or not? Because Iran says they ain't ended it until it's done, until he's learned a lesson. And he doesn't seem like he's too willing to learn a lesson. U.S. President Donald Trump has called the war on Iran an investment in the future of American children as he delivered the first address to the nation since the start of the conflict a month ago. And I've got to say, you want to say it's a war? They've been fighting tooth and nail. Say it's not a war. Why? Because they would need congressional agreement. But Donald Trump has called the war on Iran an investment. According to the president, after the conflict ends, the U.S., quote, will be safer, stronger, and more prosperous, and greater than it has ever been before. Note that he said the U.S. He didn't say America because he can't. And he certainly didn't say that Americans would be safer, stronger, more prosperous, and greater than we were before. And then before what? When? Republican Senator Ted Cruz applauded Trump's address, saying the president was exactly right tonight. The U.S. military operation, quote, is an investment in the future of our children and our grandchildren. We're on the cusp of ending Iran's nuclear blackmail. The reason? But exactly right, stated by an apparent foreign agent of the nuclear weapon processing Zionista regime, which threatens American children with the threats of false flags in America, as was done in 9/11 and the Israeli dancings in celebration. So this is about preserving Zionism, and based on the false claims of an existence of WMDs. So this is about preserving Zionism, and based on the false claims of the existence of WMDs, right? Shake a vial of anthrax in the meeting, Colin Powell. American children are not safer because the U.S. government declared war on Americans, including their sons and daughters, with the PATRIOT Act and its subsequent progeny. Did it. Tehran has long insisted that its nuclear program is purely peaceful and not aimed at obtaining a weapon. Earlier this week, high-ranking Iranian MP Alaeddin Borejardi said the country's parliament is looking into the possibility of withdrawing from the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, arguing the participation in the 1968 accord became pointless after the U.S.-Israeli attack. Just as I said was coming, folks. They got no reason to stay in it. Trump screwed that all up. Now it's S-C-R-O-O-D for the hearing sensitive. And remember, Trump reneged on the prior agreement with Iran, the International Atomic Energy Agency not finding any nuclear weapons, and the U.S. intelligence agencies finding no evidence. The nuclear weapons program, if said to exist, was obliterated by the feckless Donald, I didn't mean actually obliterated, to give me another excuse to bomb Iran for my bloody ear, thumb and toe, get my shoes, Zionista masters ritual, Trump. So how is it that this U.S. deceit and backstabbing created by Donald Let Them Eat Chaos Trump helped the children of America exactly, Cruz? How does allowing the killing of tens of thousands of babies in Gaza help the American children? If Trump is so interested in the children, like any good Epstein group globalista. Can you explain that, Melania Trump? Remember, the rights of child. It's all about the children. Globally, folks. Global institutions. Focus on that. With the Strait of Hormuz effectively closed due to the fighting, the price of gas in the U.S. went beyond $4 per gallon this week, while Trump's approval rating slipped below 40%. Let us toss this word salad to remember before Trump's meddling to ostensibly open the Strait of Hormuz was open and for no additional costs or global hardships. If there could ever be a reason half a world away, or despite Trump saying he won, through his trespass, that Iran was defeated. Iran has continued to strike Israel and U.S. military facilities in the Persian Gulf while rejecting talks with Washington. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi insisted on Wednesday that the war will go on until the aggressor is punished and Tehran receives full compensation. Doesn't sound like Iran is giving up, however defeated Trump fantasizes it is. And don't forget, this is an area from which the U.S. derives only about 1% of its petrol product needs. Meaning the U.S. has little to no interest in the strait that distillates for Americans now cost more. Why is that? Why, if the United States is the largest exporter of oil, with its own refining capacity, or as received from the 51st state of Kanukistan, does it cost more for Americans right now? Additionally, how is the state of California not a threat to the people or the interests of the United States and the American children when it regulated oil refineries out of existence just a couple of years ago due to the fraud of climate change for the children of future generations? And which enabled fraud now requires California to buy distillates from Asia, an Asia that doesn't have the needed distillates now. And diesel, almost twice the price of the national average there, as I understand it. Has this been a globalista plan all along? Is that really a question? How does this, not just with oil, but overall economic burden on the families or the oh-so-precious children, help them or their future? Instead of Operation Epstein Furry, this sounds more like Operation Epic FAFO for Trump to me. Unless, of course, Trump is onshoring the next phase of the ongoing global reset from Greenland to Panama. And I said that, right? Long while back. And you heard about that little blurb, didn't you? This is BTWRLM 662. From the We Don't Need No Stinking International Law Zionista Mouth of War Crimes Department of Hades, Hegseth, Greater North America, Hegseth draws Trump's new world map with a dig to the global south. U.S. War Crimes Secretary Pete Hegseth on Sunday outlined a new geopolitical division dubbed the Greater North America Strategy, framing it as a major shift in regional security under Trump. Now, I highlight regional for a reason. If those of you read international documents and laws and what's going on with this sustainable nonsense, that thing popped up and we're watching that right there. Under Donald onshoring globalism Trump, speaking at the U.S. Southern Command headquarters in Doral, Hegseth said the administration's strategic scope extends, quote, from Greenland to the Gulf of America to the Panama Canal, redefining the entire northern hemisphere as a part of the, quote, immediate security perimeter, close quote. But they didn't ask anyone, did the trespassers? He argued that all sovereign nations and territories north of the equator. Why is that an argument? But what if, due to unrenounced odious financial fiat debt, there are no sovereign nations, because debtor not a master be. He argued that all sovereign nations and territories north of the equator, from Greenland to Ecuador and Alaska to Ghana, should be viewed as part of a shared strategic zone rather than the global south. And should is the will of the master being voiced by the principal agent, the Greater North America, Greater Israel, Pax Judaica. And let's not forget all that prosperity to be spread to the 10 regions of the Globalista order. Quote, in the South, we will strengthen partnerships through increased burden sharing. I did say prosperity right there, didn't I? Adding that regional partners would be expected to take a larger role in safeguarding their own security interests. Remember food security, housing security, all those security, financial security? Yeah. Let's expand this more. I said, remember the pivot to China was not about military that Obama did. This is the same talk. Now it's coming home and going from the equator north. But did you miss it? That burden sharing, just like shared prosperity in Agenda 2030. That's direct democracy as well. Impose, comply, or die, because everyone has a responsibility to share the obligation of perpetual debt to a pagan god of war. And if you don't think this is the next phase toward global reset, listen to this timely newsist explaining, without mentioning climate change, that you will be using less energy, but more expensive energy, under your shared responsibility called prosperity, mentioned in Agenda 2030, to save Gaia. The article, energy market could collapse due to Iran war. Quote, the world has come close to the point where it will be necessary to significantly reduce energy consumption, close quote, Turkish expert Mehmet Dogan told Sputnik. Individual purchasing power will continue to decline amid rising energy prices, Dogan warned. U.S. attacks on Iranian energy facilities could lead to catastrophe with unpredictable consequences, the expert said. Quote, no one knows what the long-term repercussions of these strikes will be, close quote, Dogan stressed. Quote, even if all the world's energy experts gathered today, they would not be able to fully assess the scale of the fallout, close quote. The war has hit production of commodities like fertilizers, helium, and sulfur, quote, and even shampoo, he noted. So reduced energy in increasingly energy-intensive society means austerity and your eventual death, and the death of the children, those future generations of humans, as populations are necessarily reduced because of their anthropomorphic carbon dioxide contributions, right? Epstein file inhabitant bill, CO2 equals P times S times E times E times C, Gates, where P is population, S is the services per person, E is the energy used per service, and C is the carbon emitted per unit of energy. And if in that don't get you to reduce your energy, well, then the only way to affect the carbon dioxide poison you all create is to reduce the population needing that energy or services to kill you, like through disease, vaccines, war, or famine. Have you been looking at the nystagmus as to the pestilence and the plague of stupidity, the curses that plaguing us that America might perish, which Trump has wrought by his irresponsible criminal actions for no good reason, by the way, or the pretense of reason that changes daily, if not sentence by spoken incongruent sentence? And we are told Gaia agrees with everything Trump is doing and has not done. Like not commit war crimes, stop the government extortion of civil rights called taxes, eliminate the Siberian gulag and the CBDC, now called stable coins, restore sound money, honest money, to help the children into the future that they want. But if in the children have no value other than for what is evidence in the Epstein files, including Trump's at least impropriety appearance within those files some thousands of times, what is Trump saying when referring to helping the children? To do what exactly? And for whom? But squirrel, bomb, 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 bomb Iran and Gaza and their children to genocide to help ours, right? And upon that clarification of the mobster-in-chief, continuing upon the content from last episode, and true to form, for the slave master dictator thief-in-chief, Trump says Venezuela vice president will pay higher price than Maduro if she disobeys the U.S. 'Cause democracy, folks. U.S. President Donald Trump warned on Sunday that Venezuela Vice President Delcy Rodriguez might have to pay an even higher price than Venezuela President Nicolas Maduro if she did not make the right decisions. The Trump has become too barbaric, gluttonous, despicable, disrespectful, and demonic, even Zionistic, to know what is right. And he wants to, and he talked about being guided by a moral mind. Trump said on Saturday that the U.S. would not send troops to Venezuela if Rodriguez did what Washington wanted from her. What, like the victims of Epstein Island? The U.S. leader claimed that Rodriguez was willing to cooperate with the U.S. Quote, if she doesn't do what's right, she's going to pay a very big price. Probably bigger than Maduro, close quote, Trump said in a telephone interview with the Atlantic magazine. Trump also said that a U.S. absolutely needed Greenland, as the Danish island is allegedly surrounded by Chinese and Russian ships. Quote, we do need Greenland, absolutely, Trump said. The island, which is part of Denmark, a NATO ally, is allegedly surrounded by Russia and China ships, the president added. And I've just clarified for you earlier in the broadcast that treaty in 1951 obligated the United States to go ahead and militarily protect Iceland and Greenland and respect Danish sovereignty. But see, Trump doesn't care about, we don't need no stinking international law. Before we even get a chance to imagine, the terrorist mobster-in-chief has already issued warnings to three Latin American countries. Since all then, Mexico, Colombia, and Cuba have all condemned the U.S. military operations against Venezuela as a grave violation of sovereignty. President Donald Trump issued veiled warnings to the governments of Mexico, Colombia, and Cuba following a U.S. Special Forces raid, which Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro was captured. This is building to something bigger, isn't it? What do you think, Iran? Trump's comments came Saturday as he defended the Venezuela operation, characterizing Maduro as a narco-terrorist. Yeah, remember, soccer mom Nicole Good was considered a domestic terrorist and extrajudicially murdered. You see a psychopath's pattern of racketeering activity here, folks? When asked about implications for neighboring countries, Trump doubled down, as his criticism of Colombia President Gustavo Petro, a key Maduro ally. I think he tripled down on Cuba so far. Quote, he has cocaine mills, he has factories where he makes cocaine, Trump said, adding, quote, he does have to watch his ass, close quote. The U.S. president also noted that Cuba is, quote, going to be, ass is a three-letter word, not a four-letter word, right? Okay, I think I can get by with that one. The U.S. president also noted that Cuba is, quote, going to be something we'll end up talking about, suggesting that Washington wants to help the people of this failing nation, which he claimed is similar to Venezuela, like he's bombing everything in Iran, all the civilian infrastructure to help the people, free them into a better existence. Quote, it's very similar in the sense that we want to help the people of Cuba, but we also want to help the people who were forced out of Cuba and are living in this country, he said. Trump also said that something's going to have to be done with Mexico, claiming that drug cartels effectively control the country, but that President Claudia Sheinbaum Pardo is frightened of them. They're running Mexico. I've asked her numerous times, quote, would you like us to take out the cartels? Close quote. No, 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 Mr. President. No, 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 please. So we have to do something, he said in a phone interview with Fox News earlier in the day. Washington's military action has sparked widespread international condemnation, with all three nations denouncing it as a breach of international law and a threat to regional stability. I see, he's planning on making regional stability, but not the way a sovereign nation would need it, is he? Mexico's Ministry of Foreign Affairs issued a strong condemnation of the U.S. intervention, stating it, quote, seriously jeopardized regional stability, close quote, while stressing that Latin America and the Caribbean must remain a zone of peace. Cuba President Miguel Díaz-Canel described the attack as, quote, cowardly, criminal, and treacherous. When I say cowardly, that's like bully, right? Bullies do that. Bullies are really cowards inside, right? And called for international condemnation. Talk, talk, talk. Colombia's President Petro expressed deep concern and reaffirmed his government's rejection of, quote, any unilateral military action, close quote. And from the most recent tales of the economic hitman, Trump says U.S. raid on Venezuela yielded fivefold profit. U.S. President Donald Trump said that the operation in Venezuela proved financially beneficial for the United States. Quote, we had 100 billion barrels of oil in the first week. We more than paid for the entire attack. In fact, we made probably four or five times more than the cost of the attack, Trump told the Fox News broadcaster on Thursday. The United States is taking, quote, hundreds of millions of barrels of oil from Venezuela, he said, and we are giving them a lot and we are keeping a lot, the U.S. leader said. In early January, the United States launched an attack on Venezuela and captured President Nicolas Maduro and his wife Celia Flores. The presidential couple was flown to New York to face trial for their alleged involvement in narco-terrorism and posing a threat, including to the United States. And so let me just point out there this word including. In this case, it is only the United States. On Thursday, the second court hearing took place in New York. According to a Sputnik correspondent, Maduro appeared noticeably thinner. He was dressed in loose olive prison uniform in the courtroom without handcuffs, but wearing shackles. So the natural resources Trump stole for the organized crime syndicate called the United States government and his billionaire buddies is a war crime, folks. such a disgrace in chief this guy has become. Again, all he had to do is follow the law, and he could have still got it all. And that's the thing that really baffles me. Really got to be a mental defect. You could do it right, but no. We can look more important if we do it wrong. We look tougher. We don't look like so much of a loser, he thinks, but he is. He's going to lose out. And maybe this is why. Not a reason. The excuse. Because whatever goes, right, Iran? The Treasury just declared the United States insolvent. But where is that for the oil now? Everywhere. The media missed it. Insolvency isn't a Treasury, is it, though? These guys. The United States government is insolvent. That's not hyperbole. It's the conclusion drawn directly from the Treasury Department's own consolidated financial statements for fiscal year 2025, released last week to near total media silence. The number is $6.06 trillion in total assets against a $47.78 trillion in total liabilities as of September 30th, 2025. Importantly, so we've been gone for a little while here, folks. Importantly, the $47.7 trillion in reported liabilities does not include the unfunded obligations of social insurance programs like Social Security and Medicare. Those are disclosed separately in the off-balance sheet statement of Social Insurance, or SOSI. What $136 trillion looks like in your living room. Not only has the financial press ignored the consolidated financial statements, it's kind of like the CAFR here, right? Maybe we should look closer. The consolidated financial statements, but most members of Congress and members of the general public will not read the consolidated financial statements. Documents like the consolidated financial statements are not the kind of thing you want to read before driving. If that's not bad enough, most people cannot relate to the trillion-dollar numbers in the financial statements. Therefore, it is appropriate to translate them into terms that people understand. If you understand the degradation of education and our intelligence or what we can keep up with in 15 seconds now. And so, Clint Richardson will read those. I've read them. I didn't keep on reading them. Once I figured out what I was after, then I didn't need to go watch and become the accountant. You just know there's a problem, and that whether or not you can, and the decision is, do you want to try and stop some of it? And how? And how do you go about it? So the public doesn't read these financial statements, but the Congress creators read their investment portfolios, don't they? And business is good for insider trading. Wonder if it is pretty too, Alex Pretty and Nicole Good. Pretty good? Not for them. No. And from the Department of Criminal Juvenile Delinquents runs your country, U.S. creating enemies by humiliating rivals. Again, international stage, international law, international respect. There's none of that in this guy and this administration, and probably in the United States when you look at the policies generally. But my disappointment, the diplomacy being destroyed. And diplomacy maybe being the only thing that keeps us from getting this crazy and getting up to the point where, as I've been saying, more and more people are starting to say it. A mistake. We're that close to a nuclear fallout by a mistake. And that is not a cool thing when you're dealing with these juvenile delinquents. Just want to see how big the bright light gets. Washington has threatened at least five nations across three continents with its Venezuela raid, American journalist and political analyst Bradley Blankenship told RT. Oh, we could make money back by nuking somebody, can't we? Oh, we can have a fivefold profit. That justifies it, right? The U.S. administration is making enemies around the world by taking harsh steps such as seizing the leaders of sovereign nations, Bradley Blankenship said. The comments come a day after the Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro was kidnapped along with his wife Celia Flores during a U.S. raid in Caracas. Washington accuses the Venezuelan leader of narco trafficking and weapons offenses, allegations he has denied. And Alex Pretty and Nicole Good, they were deemed to be terrorists and shot in the street like dogs. Quote, when you humiliate a sovereign head of state live on television, you create the conditions for the population to resist you. Right, Iran? That is what we are seeing, Caracas, when you drag a sovereign leader through New York in an open white van. You only create enemies. That is what the United States is doing. He said such actions risk galvanizing resistance inside Venezuela and beyond. This is how you lose, Blankenship said. You do not break people's will, you harden it. I hope Trump heard that. This is how you lose, you loser. Blankenship, the founder of the Northern Kentucky Truth and Accountability Project, argued that Washington's seizure of Maduro has elevated him into a powerful political symbol rather than weakening his movement. Quote, Maduro's role is more symbolic than instrumental, close quote, Blankenship said, describing him as a continuation of the Chavista political project rather than a revolutionary figure on the scale of Simon Bolivar, Fidel Castro, and Che Guevara. And isn't that just what happened with Iran, killing the lead cleric, galvanizing the country? Quote, but he is definitely a symbol for Venezuelans as someone who resisted American imperialism, he added. According to Blankenship, Washington's approach is already having wider repercussions. By carrying out the operation against Venezuela, the U.S. has threatened multiple countries such as Colombia, Mexico, Greenland, Cuba, and Kyrgyzstan, as well as others across several continents. The peace taker Trumpenstein is. This is how you create enemies, he said, not only abroad, but at home as well. Stealing people's stuff, yeah, I'll say. You'd have thought Trump's mama would have learned him better. Blankenship also pointed to signs of internal dissent within U.S. security apparatus, noting that details of the Venezuela operation were leaked to major American newspapers before it took place. Quote, the fact that it leaked shows internal dissent, close quote, he said, adding that similar divisions have emerged during previous U.S. military actions. I took these statements as just put them on your list of things to keep looking out for as we try to assess what's happening behind someone that you, every other sentence is incongruent with the one before it. An administration that would justify, immoral acts. It's just amazing to watch, at least sickening in a way, but don't know what more to do when you're living under it, and we think we're so free, but we're not. And I don't hear many people with a plan. And I don't hear, more importantly, the people being able to analyze how they would protect themselves in a lesser fight, if you will, before we can come together to do these things and show them up. And no, it's not going to be done by voting. You're just going to... Trump is making it so you'll take a worse answer, anything but Trump. I mean, that's what's going on now. I've said this before. And that might have been another plan. And I always have to hold back when I say that. Oh, Trump was a Democrat before. And now we're hearing it. Oh, there's going to be a rout in the elections. They're going to bring the Democrats back in. Where do you think that's going to go now, folks? Where is that going to go? Would people be ready to accept just about everything and anything? But creating enemies everywhere sounds like a peaceful world, don't it? Well, we shall see, won't we, whom will be humiliated in the end. Didn't you say that, Iran? Russia denounces lawless U.S. abduction of Maduro at U.N. Security Council as it happened. Maduro pleads not guilty as he appears before a U.S. judge. The abducted Venezuelan president and his wife have denied the narco-terrorism and smuggling conspiracy charges levied against them. Kidnapped Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro and his wife Celia Flores have pleaded not guilty to all charges in a New York court on Monday. The pair were delivered to the federal court in Manhattan for arraignment following their abduction from Caracas by U.S. Special Forces just days before. Maduro is facing charges on four counts, including, quote, narco-terrorism conspiracy, cocaine importation conspiracy, possession of machine guns and destructive devices, and conspiracy to possess machine guns and destructive devices against the United States. Like Trump, He would be correct, though. Being president of Venezuela and commander-in-chief, Maduro has possession of machine guns and destructive devices, right? When asked by the U.S. District Judge Alvin Hellerstein to introduce himself, Maduro reportedly said that he is the president of Venezuela and he considers himself a prisoner of war. The Venezuela leader is reportedly being represented by Barry Pollock, a veteran criminal defense lawyer known for defending WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange in the case that saw him freed. So Maduro's defense already not looking good. First, he pleads not guilty without any pre-plea challenges. And second, he has this guy representative, the Venezuelan leader is reportedly being represented by Barry Pollock, that defended so-called WikiLeaks co-founder Julian Assange in the case that it is being universally reported saw him freed, saw Assange freed. Now, ask yourself, was Assange freed? Or did Assange agree to a judgment of guilt on a plea deal and, quote, freed, close quote, subject to and never freed of that ever-present conviction? Assange is also not freed of the continuing questions surrounding the Assange matter still up in the air because in accepting the plea deal, the judge never decided a thing, never had to apply the law, and everything not decided against it is open for the government to misuse. And Assange additionally is not forever freed of a felony conviction or for subsequent government trial purposes as a potential repeat offender, don't you know? And instead of Maduro saying in the court he was the president, his attorney should have filed a challenge that the complaint fraudulently omitted to indicate he was the president and lawfully abducted and with all the proofs and adverse consequences to a sovereign nation under international law. But there is a whole lot that could have been challenged before the plea that was not. Maybe a habeas corpus, do you think? Get it on the record. Now, for instance, judicial puppet of executive opinions and allegations aside, as I've heard is binding precedent or inciting the Manuel Noriega case, the Supreme Court of Venezuela just made the vice president in office with Maduro since 2008 the interim president. And that at least implies, if not settles the fact, that Maduro was the president and both were lawfully democratically in office. So how a U.S. court can disregard the lawful acts of a foreign government is beyond me to understand if the judiciary is more than just us and not just this. And going to the U.S. law, 5 U.S.C. 3345, for the term, quote, acting officer, close quote, as referenced in some of the guidances as to what the U.S. agrees constitutes interim official power, noting the exception in requiring Venezuela to use an interim officer where, for instance, there is an exclusion to delegating power that only the president can act, and accepting that as a universal international principle for the delegation of the lawful power, the U.S. in removing the Venezuelan democratically elected and subsequently acknowledged president, not by U.S. political opinion, but the lawful acts of the Venezuelan government, interfered with Venezuela's sovereign government function, an external military coup by decree. That's an overthrow of unfettered sovereign obligations and duties of Venezuelan government processes, and I don't see how that is not an act of war. Then, though not solely because of the U.S. seeking possession of Venezuela's natural resources, by military means initiated with large-scale strikes, then holding those stolen possessions by the threat against the remaining government of the subsequent military force, is not a war against Venezuela and a war crime? And to his credit, Maduro said so, responding in Spanish, quote, I'm a kidnapped president. I am a prisoner of war. But that wasn't set out in the record as a pre-plea avoidance challenge for appeal, to the shame, I think, of the defense attorney here, which also didn't freed Assange, right? Nevertheless, that district court may not have jurisdiction of a prisoner of war. Upon Maduro's statement, if intending justice, the judge ought to have not accepted Maduro's plea, but ordered briefing on the matter to determine the lawful status of the accused, that he was lawfully before a court of competent jurisdiction. or maybe even applied common and international recognized facts and law to not mere administration allegations and opinions, but together with the failed burden of the United States complainor and for being an extortionate, felonious prosecution under the pretense of authority by the Trump administration, causing the felonious coercion, deprivation of rights by that extortion under color of lawful authority without lawful warrant in its evasion of the lawful treatment. Lawful due process demands for Maduro or his accused, the court should have ordered Maduro back to his country because he is the president of Venezuela with no applicable lawful evidence to the contrary and immune, just like his U.S. counterpart, President Donald, deny him due process Trump. But that's not what happened. In closing the proceedings, Judge Hellerstein reportedly announced that the next hearing will take place on March 17. And don't you know, the first load of oil went to Israel, Mr. Judge Hellerstein, which is not an immediate order for the United States government to show cause the next day that Maduro is not immune from the prosecution in a district court of the United States. Meanwhile, plundering continuing, after carrying out a regime change operation in the oil-rich South American country, U.S. President Donald Trump has threatened Venezuela interim President Delcy Rodriguez with a bigger price than the one paid by Maduro. He added that the U.S. needs a total access to the oil and other things in their country that allow us to rebuild their country. Allow us to rebuild their country. Trump also said that Washington will run Venezuela until such time as a proper transition can take place. We're in charge, Trump reiterated on Sunday, noting that Rodriguez was cooperating with the U.S. Moscow has condemned the U.S. aggression and lamented that the, quote, the ideological hostility has triumphed over businesslike pragmatism, close quote. Now, all that I just said about this Maduro capture situation, there's a more wrong with this, too. My first impression on the pictures of Maduro right after the news of the U.S. coup was it seemed peculiar both Maduro and his wife were alive and completely unharmed, not roughed up in the least either. The vids and the pics look staged, and remember, even Osama bin Laden with far less, if any, security detail didn't survive. Or that most, if not all, Maduro's security detail, that were murdered were Cuban military, protecting against internal subterfuge. The story that Maduro and his wife couldn't get to the safe room in time, really? There was no notice the helicopters were approaching, and while Venezuela was under a declared state of emergency for imminent attack by the U.S., doesn't make any sense. And why weren't they sleeping in the safe room? Now, this all smelled of a CIA Mossad deal Maduro couldn't refuse. So while I'm looking at what all these U.S. lawlessness means for we the people at home, I'm not sure we're not being played in other ways as well. Maduro knows some stuff that would be of interest to Trump, in particular, if not unironically, or ironically if you must, how the elections were tampered with that Trump complains Maduro is illegitimate. Maduro is a lot more legitimate than the finger-pointing Trump in that regard. And just as you've been told behind the woodshed, an update from the Department of Let Them Eat Chaos, the consequence, U.S. banditry in Venezuela is harbinger of chaos. Washington's actions horrify, quote, even the staunchest Atlanticists, close quote, Russian U.N. envoy ambassador to the U.N. Vasi Nebenzia said, the capture of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro by the U.S. threatens to throw the world back into an era of chaos and injustice, Vasily Nebenzia has said. Washington's raid on the Latin American nation was demonstrated the world order the U.S. wants to build, the diplomat told an emergency session of the U.N. Security Council on Monday, adding that it, quote, horrifies even the staunchest Atlanticists. The U.S. attacked the oil-rich South American country on Saturday, abducting Maduro and his wife, taking them to a U.S. warship from which they were subsequently flown to New York. And Maduro says he's a prisoner of war. They appeared in court on charges of drug trafficking conspiracy on Monday, to which the Venezuelan president declared, "I'm a decent man," before entering a not guilty plea. My hang up about this, the lawyer did not put a pre-plea remedy in avoidance and get all that stuff, that the legal immunities and defenses before the plea that need to be done and the jurisdiction of the court handled. Not one. Maduro had previously warned that Washington was seeking to get his hands on Venezuelan national resources. The U.S. President Donald Trump stated on Sunday that Washington seeks to run Latin American nations so that we can take advantage of the economics of what they have. Nebenzia condemned the U.S. actions as international banditry. The U.S. open pursuit of hegemonic ambitions in Latin America and its desires to gain, quote, unlimited control over natural resources, close quote, only contribute to a resurgence of neocolonialism and imperialism, he said. The world must stand united in rejecting Washington's belligerent foreign policy, Nebenzian said, warning that the bell is already tolling for each UN member state and the future of the organization itself. And I would have to say, a lot of the words you just heard him say, those are all international law terms that all have a meaning and they have a consequence on their own. And I'd like to know then, where was Russia? As I was saying, you watched Gaza being destroyed. Where was you then? Ignoring the threat posed by the United States to the system of international relations would mean condoning the violation of international law, as well as a disregard for civilized conduct in the international stage. And what criminal regards the law anyway? When Trump says he doesn't regard international law, doesn't need it, what is he actually saying about himself? Russia, along with the BRICS nations, have already strongly condemned the U.S. actions. Moscow called the Maduro's immediate release and expressed solidarity with the people of Venezuela. But that's talk, talk, talk. Gets you where? 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 Reactions from the West have been far more muted. Well, yeah, like deaf and mute. The same force and effect in stopping genocide in Palestine against the Semitic and other Palestinians. EU Foreign Policy Chief Kaja Kallas urged restraint, calling for adherence to the UN Charter. A follow-up joint statement signed by all EU member states except Hungary neither condemned nor supported the U.S. action. Slovak Prime Minister Robert Fico condemning America's attack on Venezuela, accusing Washington of acting with impunity in erasing international law in a pursuit of resources. They have a sense of impunity because they have been getting away with it. And this is what we see, a distinction that goes on just subsequent to all these stories and what I think Iran noticed, and we're back to punching the bully in the nose. So as they've been identifying this as chaos and the nature of chaos, and no one anywhere can have any expectation then from this global banditry at any time, an oppressor decides you will comply or die. Right, Iran? Right, Alex Pretty? Right, Nicole Good? Pretty good, right? Yeah, far from it. Far from it. And we're watching an example. Didn't come from the United States. Didn't come from the people of the United States, keeping their own government in tow. No, we're watching in the world a country defend itself against this banditry in the current war with Iran. Again, politics aside, belief system aside, ideologies aside, there's an order, if you will, and it works. You can deny it. You can say there's not a law. You can say there's not a law of gravity. Gravity will take you out. So you can deny the obvious. It doesn't mean that it's real. Now, the other problem is that you start affecting other people. You might have to expect that maybe they're going to defend themselves. Even if they aren't that big a guy, even if they're not that capable, they will still try to defend themselves if they need to. It's what's called existential existence. When you listen to this guy, Trump, he goes everywhere, we're going to take your stuff, and we're going to make you better. We're going to decide for you, your life. Can't be something an American wants to hear for themselves. And we're not going to get anything else from anybody else in the political sector at this point. As I said, we're now seeing the worst of the worst. He didn't have to do this. He could have gone the other way. He hasn't. He likely will never. And now we're going to watch worse than him come in because we want relief from Trump. Watch how this works. And if you don't think that the sustainable development nonsense isn't going to come on, you don't think that the Siberian gulag is turning right around and powering up, I don't know what you're all looking at. I don't see anything to stop it at this point. It's going on underneath the skin of it all. Trump's bringing it all in, as I've been saying. Once the Democrats get a hold of it, that's everything they've been asking for. In fact, I'm watching a few of them, the key people that have been in government and politics a long time. You'll hear them make the comment about they missed the plot. Yeah, watch what they say. They now get to talk correctly, and you think that they're actually going to implement that, just like Trump did against you. They get to now say where they missed the plot, and then say all the things that your aspirations say we need to do, and you think those are going to be the people. See what? I'm watching it right now. They're already getting there. But speaking of stealing territory, once a grifter, always a grifter, whatever it takes, right? Kennedy Center Christmas Eve jazz concert canceled after Trump name added to the building. Does this guy know no bounds? Is his morality so bent that he's got to see his name everywhere? A planned Christmas Eve jazz concert at the Kennedy Center, a holiday tradition dating back more than 20 years, has been canceled. The show's host musician, Chuck Redd, said that he had called off the performance in the wake of the White House announcing last week that President Trump's name would be added to the facility. As of last Friday, the building's facade reads Donald J. Trump and the John F. Kennedy Memorial Center for the Performing Arts, according to the White House. The president's hand-picked board approved the decision, which scholars have said violates the law. Trump has been suggesting for months that he was open to changing the center's name. Quote, when I saw the name change on the Kennedy Center website and then hours later on the building, I chose to cancel our concert, Redd told the Associated Press in an email Wednesday. Redd, a drummer and vibraphone player who has toured with everyone from Dizzy Gillespie to Ray Brown, has been presiding over the holiday, quote, jazz jams at the Kennedy Center since 2006, succeeding bassist William Keeter Betts. The Kennedy Center did not immediately respond to emails seeking comment. The center's website lists the show as canceled. President Kennedy was assassinated in 1963, and Congress passes the law the following year, naming the center as a living memorial to him. Kennedy's niece, Carrie Kennedy, has vowed to remove Trump's name from the building once he leaves office, and former House historian Ray Schmock is among those who say any changes would have to be approved by Congress. And I think they need to challenge that right now while he's in office. The text of the law I read, if correct, prohibits that expansion. And as we continue reading here, the law explicitly prohibits the Board of Trustees from making the center into a memorial to anyone else and from putting another person's name on the building's exterior. Trump, a Republican, in name only, I think, has been deeply involved with the center named for an iconic Democrat after mostly ignoring it during his first term. He has forced out its leadership, overhauled the board while arranging for himself to be heard, and personally hosted this year's Kennedy Center honors, breaking a long tradition of presidents mostly serving as spectators. Remember, he surrounds himself with losers, right? The changes at the Kennedy Center are part of the president's larger mission to fight woke culture at federal cultural institutions, while his administration allows white culture to go commit genocide and destroy nations, or attempt to. Numerous artists have called off Kennedy Center performances since Trump returned to office, including Issa Rae and Peter Wolf. Lin-Manuel Miranda canceled a planned production of Hamilton. But Donald, whatever it takes, Trump. Then again, Kennedy was assassinated to get his name on that building. Does Donald, old Nick Deer Trump, know of something that we don't know? For those of you playing 6-7-D chess. Right, Pepe the Frog? This has been BTWRLM 662, and I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature willing?
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Sunday, the clock strikes 3. How
out in house court, no place to hide, a cantaloupe fast, ready to burst for unspoken truths and unquenchable thirst behind the woodshed. No stone unturned, house words ignite, the airwaves burn, stand up, listen, it's time to learn. Next week, heed the call, behind the woodshed standing tall.